lineouts, racks.
Pulls, engage!
What an amazing try!
Tries and tackles, dissected by South Africa's top rugby minds.
That is world class!
This is To The Last Drop, your weekly in-depth rugby podcast with Liam Delcombe and Brendan Nell.
This is To The Last Drop. I'm Brendan Nell.
I'm Liam Delcombe.
And it's been a week of build-up to the Scottish Test. A very low-key build-up so far. Boks have been in Jersey, now they're in Edinburgh, but keeping a very low profile. And lots of talk about the Scots this week. Them, big test coming up, first one of the November tour.
Yeah, you say low profile. It's probably one of those. If you were in Edinburgh and you were up and down the Royal Mile, then you may not have said low-key. I get what you're trying to say. I mean, Jersey's a little bit out of the way, so that was the first part of the build-up. And I suppose they wanted to be a little bit out of the way, I suppose, for that camp. But the real business starts this week, and it's actually become quite a much anticipated test.
Yeah, we had the appetizer last week, New Zealand England, which is a great game to obviously watch. Dramatic towards the end, and I'm sure a lot has spawned a number of columns about what should and what shouldn't have happened. But New Zealand won that game. I suppose it's the ever old test of North versus South and how they want to get one over the Southern Hemisphere the whole time. And the Boks are the big draw card. Let's be honest. I mean, they're world champions. Scotland felt like they didn't fire a shot in that World Cup game against the Boks. And this is probably their first chance to do it again. And they had a solid victory over Fiji this weekend.
Yeah, the slightly disappointing thing of that game against Fiji is that if Fiji had 15 players on the field, you know, for the bulk of that game, or, you know, for much longer, it might have been a better game. I'm not suggesting for one moment Fiji would have gone on to win the thing, because I think Scotland were far too good. But there might have been more of a contest, and we could have probably get a better idea of where Scotland really is at. So a good hit out for them, first international of the autumn series. So they'll be very satisfied with that performance. But of course, it's a few notches up this weekend against the world champions. And I think you're right. I mean, I think they would have felt after that World Cup opener last year, you know, that they didn't fire a shot and they didn't ask all the questions that, you know, they may have arrived in France with. I think if you also look at what's happened away from the international scene, if you look at the development of the players elsewhere, especially in the URC, you get the sense that the Scots will be quite fired up come Sunday.
Yeah, I think they probably will. And I mean, that's a key point, because they are a better side that since that World Cup game, some of their players have gone on to win the URC. They've beaten England at Twickenham. They've scored some big victories, but they're probably their biggest thing has just been consistency to put those performances together. Yeah, they score those one-off victories in the Six Nations, but they sort of fall short when it comes against the bigger sides. But I'm just wondering, I mean, and we're going to go into that very soon now. You had a chat with somebody about just how well they prepared for this international in terms of playing those big games.
Yeah, I remember chatting to Franco Smith last year in the build-up to a league game against the Bulls, and he was talking about Scotland's players have improved, but that he felt that mentality in the big games is one thing that that was still lacking, that was something that he was trying to inculcate in his squad. And there's no doubt whatsoever that he's achieved that objective. If you look at the way they went on to win the URC. Now, the question is whether those players, and there's a large chunk of them obviously now playing in Gregor Townsend's Scotland team, how they transfer those skills to test level. So that became a talking point in our little chat. And yeah, I mean, Franco didn't really want to talk about the test per se, you know, the nitty-gritty of this weekend's game. But he gave us a vague idea of, you know, the qualities that some of his players will take into that game. The other pertinent question was those players who went on to win the URC last year in such dramatic circumstances, you know, coming to this season's campaign, if that mantle weighs them down or is something that they're embracing. And Franco Smith typically had an answer.
Let's have a listen.
Oh, thanks, Liam. Thanks for having me again. Now, first of all, that's past tense for us. I think the earlier we got rid of the idea of defending our title and, you know, we got rid of that. It was all about conquering a new season and one game at a time. And, you know, I don't want us, the team and the players specifically, to be burdened with that extra pressure. So we know what how challenging it is, you know, to repeat the last year's outcome. So we're going to just take it one game at a time and not think too much of what's happened, although it was fantastic at that time.
Mm. How difficult is it to do that, to get that into players' heads that you've got this, you can walk around now with your chest out, you've earned the right, but then to sort of temper it as well with staying grounded?
Liam, yeah, I'm going to try and avoid being arrogant. Obviously, you train for a final from the first day. You know, so when I arrived there 2.5 years ago, all the teams that I've coached, the objective from the first training is to win a competition. So it was easy to then instill a humility, a work ethic, to set new goals and new dreams. I think it was easy from the first day for the players to know that we are not done yet. We want to project going forward to become the best version of ourselves. Winning on the way is obviously fantastic, but that just fuels our energy or gives us energy, and it just fuel us to keep on improving ourselves as individuals and as players to live out the dream and to become the best version of ourselves. And I think that is the challenge, is not to just be a once-off performing team, but a consistent performing player in a playing group.
How have you found, it's one thing to try and internalize that, all those elements with your own players, but then in terms of the opposition and how they perceive you, how have you found opposing teams now that you are champions?
Look, the first thing that I've noticed was that a lot of what we did last year regarding driving mauls, some of the kicking way we kicked and some of the things that we do was adopted by some of the teams. You know, I noticed a lot more drives, a lot more people working in the harder on the mall. And, you know, that was good to see, because I definitely think plays an enormous part in the game. You can only create space through that. So I did feel, you know, that the teams, obviously, one, changed a little bit the way they play. Two, they are playing every game as if it's their final. You know, it's noticed that the energy that they bring and the enthusiasm and the eagerness, I think the way especially the Sharks came at us in the first 45 minutes of that game just proved how much respect our team has earned from the opposition. So it's obvious, you know, in their approach and in their preparation, that they want to challenge us and they want to challenge themselves. And I'm sure that the last conversation by the coach in the changing room is to say, you are playing the champions. This is your opportunity to show and shine, you know. And I realize that, and therefore I try to think that we prepare the player during the week for that extraordinary effort coming from opposition.
And it must have been hugely pleasing to come to South Africa. You didn't get the win in Durban, but you went home with a rich harvest of points nonetheless. I mean, that must have been hugely pleasing.
Yeah, obviously, I'm difficult to please. We are difficult to please as a team, and our complacency slips in so quickly. But it was good to send off the players that went into the national camp with confidence after two games against this Springbok-filled Sharks team, and best of the rest, Springboks in the Stormers side, you know. So it will give them a lot of confidence, hopefully, in this next 4 weeks in the test match arena. So, from that perspective, it was very good for us. The lock points, I really appreciate that, because we know how hard it is to travel to South Africa and win games, and to get any points for that matter. So really thankful for the grace from that perspective that we managed to get the 7 points. I think that we'll take that any day.
You also have the dual obligation of doing well in the URC, but you also have to prepare players for the rigors of test rugby. And on that front, obviously, the Glasgow Rangers have done exceptionally well as well. The growth of your players, since you took over, I remember having a conversation with you before a pool game against the Bulls last season, where you were talking about how you need to prepare them for the next step and the next step. Our Scottish players maybe in the past didn't warm to the occasion necessarily when they had a big match in front of the mouth. There's a bit of a mental barrier. How do you think your players have warmed to that task? How do you think they've sort of, in many ways, overcome it?
Yeah, look, it's a process. It's a technical, a physical, mental, and a technical process in that sequence, you know. So a lot of hard work went in creating belief and establishing, you know, belief in themselves, and then that technical development, then it comes to a different level. And if you can then believe you win, that also influences obviously what type of player you create. So our journey in the last 2 and a half years around first establishing ourselves, then started to win consecutive games, then to reach finals, to use the whole squad, not just some players, was important for me. We need to bring young players through. That is something that I found when I coached Italy. When I got the Italian job, there was a huge turnover. Not enough was done to bring the next generation through, and suddenly in a test match arena, you look embarrassingly poor. But because of the lack of rugby development at a certain age and junior level. So, with that in mind, I always coached from that perspective. I coached from performance director or international head coach's perspective to see how many of these players we can develop and get them physically, mentally, and technically ready to also perform in the test arena. And gradually, we've grown that competence. We've used already in the 6 games 37 players, which was important also. The one to allow the test match internationals enough game time, but not overplay them. At the same time, bring the next generation through at a high level in very competitive matches in a very competitive competition. So for the future, you know, I think that the current Scotland coaching group and Gregor Townsend would have already identified most of the players for the 27 World Cup. Part of what we as club coaches must do is project the country's performance beyond that, so into 2031, to make sure that there's progression, that the lessons and the learned and the quality of the current group is also being transferred onto the younger group. So by the time they, you know, take over the baton, they will also be established and also be well prepared to continue along that path and to make Scotland obviously as competitive as possible in the Six Nations. But not just that is where the main brand is grown for rugby in Scotland. The participation of younger kids and the way you know compete with football in that country is through a quality international team, and that is obviously what we think we can contribute to Scotland is by establishing the next generation beyond 2027 as well.
I take it you've put the last, or Scottish rugby's put the last World Cup firmly behind them. You've taken some huge strides since by winning the URC. So in terms of a launch pad working towards the next World Cup, I mean, you almost have the ideal platform now.
Well, Scotland, I wouldn't say this is ideal yet. I think obviously it's something there's still a work on and we still got to grow. But yes, we've the what we set out to do is surely but slowly getting together from a Glasgow Warrior perspective. So the main objective is not just Scotland, but obviously, like I explained before, the growth is important. So I do feel that the strides that the players have made and the coaching group has made in the last 16, 17 months is going to influence the Scottish rugby player program beyond 2027.
I promise not to ask you anything specific about Saturday's test, but if we look back to last year's contest between those two sides, the one in Marseille, the opener for Scotland and for the Springboks, would it be fair to say we can anticipate a closer game?
I would like to think so, and I would like to hope so from a Scotland rugby perspective, because that obviously underlines that the work one try and do, you know, takes it to the next level. But I do think playing at home in front of the Scottish fans is a very important ingredient. You know, they haven't. Most of the team that I coach have only, you know, had some big wins away from home, and it was going to be good to play in front of their own people having a sellout Murrayfield any day is brilliant. And to sing the flower of Scotland in that atmosphere might bring a little bit more from them, or will definitely bring something more from them. But South Africa is playing well at the moment. As a collective, they played really well in the last game against Argentina. You know, in all aspects of the game, well, there was some good set piece. Was a good set piece performance defensively. They were good enough, and then obviously their attack was second to none, scoring the 47 points or whatever they scored. So they are, and they've now spent the week in camp in Jersey, which will allow them to be best prepared. Scotland went the other way, and they used a game as preparation against Fiji. So looking forward to see how those two aspects weigh up against each other on Saturday.
Franco Smith, as ever, thank you for your insights. That was fantastic. And enjoy the game on Saturday. Hope you find everything in it that you really wanted, because obviously you've got a foot in each camp.
Yeah, I've literally got a foot in each camp. And no, thank you for having me. And yeah, we look forward to see a good game of rugby and on Sunday.
Wonderful. Thanks so much. Thanks for your time.
Welcome.
So he's sage, listening to somebody like Franco Smith. I mean, we've both known him since he was a player. He's always been a very thoughtful guy too, and very much, you know, mind on sort of trying to be one step ahead of the game as such. And, you know, his results have shown he's a great coach. He's done well wherever he's gone. And Glasgow definitely continue. But, yeah, that's one point of looking at the Scots. I went and found an old mate of mine, the author Pete Burns, and he's written, I think, 14 or 15 books around rugby in the UK. He's interviewed almost every guy, has done a number of Lions tours. Great mate of the pod as well. And I asked him just what the feeling is. I thought, because it's one thing getting a coach, but it's another thing getting somebody on the ground. Just what's the feeling? Do Scotland feel they can beat the Springboks this time? And just what, you know, how the box is seen outside South Africa? Because sometimes, you know, we're quite insular sometimes. We know the box are great for us, but you know, sometimes it's always good to see what the other people think as well. So, here's the chat with Pete. Have a listen. It's all about Saturday's game, and it's a lot of fun.
With a big test on Sunday against Scotland, traditionally very tricky side for the Springboks, I think for most teams, because Scotland the Brave, we all know that. Chatting here to Peter Burns, from journalist from Scotland. Peter, maybe just introduce yourself, that I know your full title, before I get it wrong.
I'm actually not technically a journalist, but I have written now 11 different rugby books on Scotland and the Lions mainly. And I've been a sports editor for sports books for nearly 20 years, which is quite terrifying how long that's been. joining you in the podcast world recently. So working with the Offside Line rugby website. So that's been a lot of fun. And yeah, and basically I just go out and interview hundreds and hundreds of rugby players around the world. That's pretty much been my career for the last 10 years. So it's not a bad one.
Well, it's not a bad one. You don't have to be technically a journalist. I mean, there's a love for the game, and that's what matters. And today we're going to obviously be speaking a bit about the test this coming Sunday against Scotland. I thought we'd get a different view, and just, you know, so our listeners can, our viewers can just maybe see what the view is from the other side. Let's start with an easy one. Where is Scotland now? Obviously, didn't have the World Cup campaign they wanted. Probably a bit disappointing in Six Nations. Just where does Gregor Townsend stand, and what's the outlook for Scotland in these autumn internationals?
Yeah, I think Gregor stands where he has stood for, you know, the last 5 or 6 years, where we so often see Scotland producing some outstanding performances. You know, we've had a couple of really big wins at Twickenham. We've had some big wins against the Wallabies, for example, in November tests. We've pushed the All Blacks pretty close a couple of times we've played them. And, you know, we've not been blown out of the water when we've played the Box up in Edinburgh. But we seem to always follow on those performances with a massively disappointing one. We always come into the Six Nations, everyone's dark horse that we're going to do something in the tournament. And more often than not, we fall flat on our faces. In light of that, you know, kind of the Millennium Stadium in Cardiff, as it's called now, the Principality Stadium, has always been a bit of a graveyard for us. So having had a great November, we come into the spring and we normally lose to Wales. We kind of kicked that monkey off the back last year, but then we go to Rome and we lose there. So Gregor is very much as I say, in the same place he's always been, that we keep thinking we're on the cusp of a breakthrough and it doesn't quite materialize. And I think at this stage, patience is getting a lot thinner. And we talked about the World Cup game. So much emphasis was placed on that South Africa game and we didn't fire a shot. And that was incredibly disappointing. And after that, we kind of knew that we weren't going to beat Ireland and they blew us away in the end. You know, so it was a disappointing tournament, and really all hinged on that South Africa game, and we weren't really even in it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as you say, I mean, I just think of the performance they put up against England last year. Dion Funamava's tries, some excellent tries. And when Scotland tend to get on a roll and tend to get on attack, they can play some beautiful rugby. Yeah, and especially from this side of the world, we always support them against somebody like England. But I think that's probably most of the world supports anybody against England. But yeah, it is a strange one because they do play rugby in spurts almost, and it just can't seem to get that consistency at international level. And as you said, the patience might be running thin if they don't have a great autumn series. Do you think Gregor, I mean, his contract's probably a bit longer than that, but do you think there'll be a couple of calls for change?
Yeah, well, so his contract, he got an extension that took him, I think, to 2020, end of 25, into 26. As always with these things, it's who might replace him. And this is where it might be interesting for your listeners, is obviously Franco Smith, the consistency that he has brought to Glasgow, whereas, you know, before he arrived, they were having won the Pro 12 in 2015, had a few seasons where they were doing pretty well. They got to a final against Leinster at Celtic Park, and they lost that in the Pro 14 or whatever iteration of the league that it was at that stage. But Franco came in, has, from all accounts, absolutely beasted them fitness-wise, manages his squad superbly. And, you know, the proof is in the pudding of what a quality coach he's been, the way they won the league last year, the way they're going right now. And the obvious candidate would be him. I mean, beyond Franco, there's not many people, I would say, available of that kind of test quality out there to replace Gregor. So I think he was very much, you know, David Nusafour is coming in now as a new performance director at Scottish Rugby. And he is, I think there's going to be some heat on Gregor for the first time in a long time to actually prove his mettle over the next few months.
Yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, Franco has done exceptionally well. And I was going to ask you that about, you know, Glasgow's success. Obviously, winning at Loftus at altitude is not something many teams have done. I think only Munster had done it in the URC before them. And the way they managed that final, I was there that night, was exceptional. And then obviously winning against the Stormers this last weekend, we were also looking at, you know, the questions around, yeah, is what's wrong with the Stormers at the moment. But it takes away, that shouldn't take away from what was an excellent performance by Glasgow. And so I suppose in that respect, them winning on all these grounds that they traditionally win on gives confidence as well. And Franco doing an exceptional job. Do you see that filtering through to the national side? Or do you think it's, two very different beasts that are getting managed very differently?
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of a confidence scenario here, there's no doubt that Glasgow, I mean, compare Edinburgh and Glasgow, and they're completely different places. Again, obviously, Sean Everett, another South African in charge there, but they are very different environments. The psychology within the team is completely different. Like, Glasgow are just thoroughbred winners now. They are in the fight to 86, 87 minutes. We saw, and I have to say, the URC has been, we love it up here. And I think it's incredible. I suppose a testament to how good Glasgow now are is the Sharks game last week, where you rolled out the big guns for the champions coming in. And from a Scottish point of view, very, very encouraging, albeit they lost the game, that they went toe-to-toe with a largely Springbok-based team. And were able to pick up those two bonus points and getting that try in whatever it was, the 82nd minute, because they were able to keep going. That is a huge confidence booster. It would have been even better if they'd won. But to come back from that, have experience of playing those Bok players, which obviously we'd never have had in the past. You know, I think back to my childhood of watching Super Rugby and Currie Cup on the telly, and the idea that we could possibly have Scottish players going down and not losing by 80 points to these teams would be a pipe dream. To actually be able to go to win a league against the Bulls at home is incredible. And then to go, you know, down to Durban and go toe to toe with a largely Springbok pack with Springboks like scattered throughout the back line is amazing. And that's going to set them up, you know, this, the fear factor of, or and the mystery and unknown quantity of a Springbok team coming in November isn't there in quite the same way. Whilst also we recognize that you guys know a lot more about us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, I think with that World Cup game last year as well, you could sense the Springboks were really seriously taking the game very seriously. I think fans might sometimes, you know, write off Scotland and Wales in terms of the history of South Africa's success against them and say, no, well, we should win that one. But I know the Boks were taking it extremely seriously in that game. And I mean, that game was tense until Monty the Boks, no-look kick for Kurt the Aronson.
That was outrageous.
Because there's an interesting one there, because now the Boks have only got two flyers on tour, and Hendre and Marnie. So it'd be interesting to see, you know, who's going to be playing for that game as well. I suppose by the time this comes out, we will know. This is being recorded a little bit earlier. But, yeah, it's almost a replay. I could very much see the same sort of side going toe-to-toe with Scotland. And I suppose Gregor would probably enjoy that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, I've spoken to a lot of the players about the game in Marseille, and there's no doubt that they look back on it with huge regret because they didn't fire a shot. And I think the conclusions they came to is actually, you know, disappointingly, a lot of the players, they hadn't been at a World Cup before. A lot of the key players hadn't been there before, and they were spooked by the occasion. And that line speed that the Boks brought in defence, especially with Jesse Creel and Peter Steph Dutoy coming up the line so hard and kind of like an umbrella rush defence and just shutting down Finn and Russell's options. And I think they were hugely disappointed with the contribution, I suppose, of Sione Tuipulotu and Hugh Jones, that they didn't do more to help Finn create width to get the ball out to the guys like Doohan Bandemova and Darcy Graham. But they'll have looked at that, you know, and I'm sure they're thinking of, you know, they're going to be coming out with a playbook to counter all these kind of things, because what they don't want to do is what happened in Marseille, is you get sucked into going around the fringes, and and as the world of rugby knows, you don't want to take the Springboks on around the fringes. You're not going to win that battle unless you're a France team with the, you know, some of the cattle that they have. No other team can take on the Boks around the fringes, so they're going to have to think smart. It'd be interesting, as you say, to see what kind of team Rasty goes for, because it's only a 6-day turnaround to the England game, which is probably the big game of the tour for you guys. So, you know, in many regards, we're kind of hoping we might take them on the hop. Do you put out a team like you did against Argentina, or is that your one experiment of the year? So we'll just have to, well, obviously at the time of recording, we're going to know, but that all the focus in Scotland, this is the big game for us this November. We don't want to fall foul of the Wallabies. We've got a great record against them in recent years, and we want to take them on and not be the team that falls to them. But the big one is 100%. Taking on the Boks. And if you take the scalp of the world champions, we've not done it since 2010. Before that, it was 2002. And before that, it was in the 50s. But so we want to, these guys are desperate to do it. I know Gregor is, again, as we said, there's pressure on him. We have to deliver something. These are just friendlies. But if we can perform well, if we can get a win, my God, that sets us up for the Six Nations like nothing else possible.
I was going to say, because the talk around here is obviously after the year the Springboks had, they won the rugby championship, drew their test series against Ireland. There's a bit of disappointment about that, because I think the players would be the first to admit they probably should have won that 2-0, and they let Ireland in at the back there. And that game against Argentina was a disappointment from just the way they closed out that game. They could have got the win at the end there, but it was a young team, so there is a bit of and the understanding there. But Rossi's made it quite clear. I mean, the squad he's picked, many of those 11, like, there's been a couple of changes because of injuries, but many of those 11 debutants this year aren't there, and they're sitting at home. And he's picked very much the tried and tested double World Cup winning core of his group. And the talk around here has been that this could almost be the last sort of hurrah for this group together before all the big changes start coming. Now, I mean, we know a lot of those guys aren't going to make the next World Cup because they'll be 35 plus. But obviously, we want to hold on to them for as long as possible. But we've already seen somebody like Faf de Klerk, Trevor Nyakani fall by the wayside. And that's been quite interesting because we didn't expect that. So what I was going to say is that with that in mind, do you think there would be a sense that the Boks might be vulnerable in terms of that, in terms of being in this process that they're changing? Or do you guys in Scotland expect basically the full ball Bock team that basically won the World Cup to produce what they produced in Nelspruit in their last game?
I wish I could say that we thought they were vulnerable, but it is the strength of that, even an aging team, and the strength and depth, the quality of play, the body of work is terrifying. We only have to look back to Edinburgh playing the Lions a few weeks ago and being 48-0 down at halftime against a team of no superstars. And yeah, the strength in South African rugby is phenomenal. This is going to, if Scotland were to win this game, it would be like beating the 2015 All Blacks. The Springboks, this is the greatest Springbok team of all time from our point of view. And I'm sure you guys probably agree with that.
Mm.
And they are pushing hard on that 2015 All Blacks team, which is probably the greatest team of all time.
Yeah.
I wish we could, roll out, but like Vili Raru, if he gets his 100th cap and all this kind of stuff, and he's got so much pressure maybe on his position, he is still just frighteningly good and can tear a team to pieces. He's not showing his age. There are no chinks in this team. We just have to hope it's a Sunday game. Focus is really going to be on the following week going down to Twickenham, and they think that they've got the body of work to just turn up and roll us over, which is highly unlikely. We all know what Rassie's like. He's not going to let them come into a game like this feeling like that way. But, that's really our only hope.
Look, you say that, but from our point of view, the one thing that's sort of changed in a way since their World Cup game is you've not only got 1-2 Paluto now, you've got now two. And the one is in exceptional form at the moment for Glasgow. And we expect him to be probably in the same sort of form. And it doesn't seem like there's an over-reliance on the South Africans that sort of made their home in Scotland, the Duan and the Carl Steyn and Hugh Jones and those guys. It seems like the team's a bit more complete in that respect. Of course, I'm basing most of this on what I see in URC, but and Greg is a different coach. But with the two Paluto brothers there and some of the changes there, do you expect Scotland to be a lot stronger in terms of the challenge they put up? I know we've spoken about what they didn't fire a shot, but the shots that they're going to fire, they're pretty decent when they fire them for their club sides.
Yeah, totally. And I think it's too soon for Mosese Tuipulotu, but the combination of Sione Tuipulotu and Hugh Jones is world class. And it's only a year on from that game in Marseille, but it's a lot of rugby that they've played together, and they're deadly. Mm-hmm. And Kyle Steyn, he is just a superb player. I would guess, again, we're going to know the team by now, but I would guess that he, injury permitting, will be on one wing and Doohan will be on the other. It'll be a close-run thing with Darcy Graham. But, those two and Blair Kinghorn at fullback, that's a hell of a back three. Size, great in the air. Kyle and Blair Kinghorn, incredible footballers. And that power game that Doohan can bring. And he's not performed against the Springboks yet and will be desperate to. From the Lions and through to that game in Marseille, he's not yet done to the Springboks what he's done to other teams, and he would absolutely love to. But yeah, it's just like, as you guys know, it's cohesion, it's playing combinations, it's another year of rugby for these guys playing together. It's Finn Russell, another year down the line, he's in a different environment at Bath, he's settled there, they're top of the league, he is having quite a quiet start to his season, but only because he's not doing the fireworks stuff. He's actually controlling games like a world-class 10 should control it, and he's got the magic now and again that he can bring out. So yeah, there's a lot of threats across the park in the Scotland team, but unfortunately you're coming up against a very well-oiled machine that don't like to leak points. They like to dominate, and we've had even that November game a few years ago, it was quite close, and then it was actually almost, I remember the frustration of it, Makazole Mapimpi scored, and it was almost straight hands down the line, just created a gap for him. And having battled and battled and battled, there's just almost like a simple run in for him, which turned the game. And that can, we're just so aware that you cannot let anything drop for even a second against the Bocks.
So I'll take it from there. I think we're going to start closing off now, but I'll take it for that. You're not going to back Scotland for a win, if you're going to give a prediction?
Oh, Brendan. every single time. I get so excited, and I think it's going to happen. I think every Six Nations, we're going to win the Grand Slam. And then I sit down at Murrayfield, the kickoff gets struck, and all that hope evaporates because I've just had too many years of disappointment. So I'll tell you what, on that Sunday, this Sunday coming up with this game, I will be full of optimism. And then I will see the box roll down the tunnel, stand for the anthems, and I'll compare sizes, and I'll look at those superstars on that side in the green tracksuits, and I'll be thinking, I hope it's close.
Well, obviously, I hope it's a great game, because I mean we've had some epic battles against Scotland, and they have tested the box over the last couple of years and that, and it's great to always play them. There's always something in it with the South Africans in there, so let's just hope it's a good game. I think we'll obviously go for a Bok win, but let's just hope it's worthy of the occasion. I suppose,
Brendan, what we want is a tour down to see you guys. We've not had one of them in a long time. I think 2006 was the last time we had maybe.
2013, wasn't it? Nelspruit.
Well, that was a kind of like tournament, yeah. But we haven't had like a series or anything, like, or even more than one test at a time against you guys. So,
we need to have those. Hopefully these old school tours are going to start coming back as soon as I think the All Black one picks up and people start realizing the value of them. Yeah, these we could probably talk for hours about test leagues and the way World Rugby seems to not know what fans want and keep on telling us they're changing things for fans. But I think we all like the old school tours and it'd be great to see Scotland down here for that.
Yeah, we'd love it.
Yeah, but thanks for your time, man. Yeah, and let's hope, as I say, it's a great occasion.
Yeah, thanks so much, mate.
Cool, but
yeah, as you said, it's always interesting to get a foreign perspective, if I can put it that way. One of the questions that came out of the press conference on Wednesday, one of the Springbok players was asked, in fact, it was Andre Estesen that was asked about what it's like to play for a team like the Springboks, who have developed all these champion qualities. They win these tight contests. So it's something that, you know, the world is aware of. The box, you know, you box them into a corner and they find a way of boxing their way out of it.
They do. Well, that's the one thing Yeah, I mean, often they talk about somebody like Chesden as the Swiss Army knife that he pops up everywhere and, you know, sort of dismantles things. And but there's so many of them in that box squad. There's so many of the guys who stand up when you think Eben's not having a good game. Then Peter Steph always has a good game. But, when one player doesn't have a good game, then somebody else steps up. And that's their quality. It's going to be tough in Edinburgh. There's going to be a lot of pressure on them, but it's nothing they haven't seen before. And it's going to be interesting to see. I think the box are going to win this one. It's going to be a tough one, though. It's always tough around there, but I think we'll probably see the box pull through in the last 20.
Mm. Yeah, I think the other big difference between this game and the one they played at the start of last year's World Cup was, although it was a pool game, but it also had that sort of feeling of dread around it in the build-up, especially. Nobody wanted to lose it because then you end up, you still have to play Ireland and you could very well not make the quarterfinal. So did you have a sort of a knockout feel about it? I think there'll be slightly less pressure this time around. I think there'll be more attacking instinct, if I can put it that way. I don't think it'll be necessarily do or die in everything they do. I think the players will be slightly more relaxed this time around.
The big thing for Scotland, of course, is just can they stand up to the physicality? Glasgow's become a very physical team. As is Edinburgh, but the box are relentless when they get into that mood, and that's going to be the key, because both sides have got some great attacking players out wide, and certainly Scotland will test the box out there. Let's hope it's a decent game. No
prediction cops. Time. Prediction
yeah,
time.
Prediction time. Saying? I'm going to go for a box victory, 32-16, but being close until the last 20.
Mm. Yeah, if I think back to the team that played Scotland last year, no Kitsoff, no Malherbe, no Willemse, no Faf de Klerk. They, of course, haven't named their 23 yet, but I mean, those guys aren't on tour, so there may be more. But I think that it will probably follow a similar theme, and I'm going to give it to the box, 27-16.
Oh, 11 points there. Now, listen, it is a tricky game, and I think the way that none of us are going for a blowout suggests just how seriously you have to take Scotland nowadays. It's not the old days where you thought you could, if the weather was okay, you could just rock up to Murrayfield. They are a seriously good team. So
yeah,
I think that reflects that. So that's our prediction. Let us know yours. And once again, this has been To The Last Drop.
Thanks for listening. For the latest insights and rugby analysis each week, plus new episode alerts, please follow or subscribe to the series. Or find all episodes at jacarandafm.com or the Jackpot app. That is world class.